Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Sacramento might be slightly overshadowed by the Bay Area, but those in the know recognize that the capital city as a true destination for food lovers, and it's been that way for decades. Becky Grunewald is a longtime Sacramento food and culture writer. Her blog, Hecka Sac, has been going strong for two decades now, and her latest article is in this month's Comstock's magazine, and it's shining a light on some of the city's small food factories. So we're going to learn a little bit more about some of these Sacramento staple foods, as well as get a preview to one of the biggest food events of the summer. The 79th annual Japanese Food Bazaar is happening this Saturday at the Sacramento Buddhist Church. Becky, welcome back to Insight.
Thanks. It's nice to be back so soon. And I was last here talking about food at the fair, and I did read that attendance was up this year. So I'm going to chalk that up to the power of public radio.
Oh, absolutely. And the power of Becky, too. Thank you so much, as always, for stopping by. Perfect for lunchtime, since we broadcast live at noon. I want to start with the Japanese Food and Cultural Bazaar. 79 years. Is this one of the longest running events in the city?
It has got to be. And it is my favorite local festival. And the reason that it's my favorite is because of the food. And we're going to dig into that soon. But yeah, it's been going on for 79 years. It's at the Buddhist Church on Riverside. You can expect it's this Saturday from 11 to 7. You can expect crowds. You can expect entertainment. You can expect great food. And it is forecast to be 102 on Saturday. This is an indoor and outdoor event. So you will be eating. You will be sweating. And there's lots of handheld fans there to keep you cool.
Yeah, stay hydrated. Since you're a pro for this food bazaar, if it's someone's first time this weekend, how should they tackle this event? Because it can get pretty packed.
Mm-hmm. They know how to handle lines. They've been doing this for 79 years, and they have an army of volunteers. So that said, there's so many different food options, and that they're at many different areas. So it's great to go with a family or a group, and you just fan out, you all get your dish, and then you convene and you sit together. And then you will see when you get there, you will smell the charcoal. It's the teriyaki chicken that is the iconic dish at the Buddhist Bazaar. And the smoke will be billowing. It is a large, succulent portion of teriyaki chicken and rice for $10. It's really a whole meal, but it's really fun for everyone to try a little bit of everything.
I mean, attendance can be upwards of 35,000 people. This is the largest fundraiser for the Sacramento Buddhist Church. There are so many volunteers that make this happen. How long are they cooking? I mean, it must be an enormous amount of work to make this a reality.
They start preparing weeks ahead. I actually did try. I was going to volunteer this year, a couple weeks back, but my shift got canceled. I wanted to see the inner workings of it. But I encourage you, if you love this event, please do volunteer, because post-COVID, they've compacted it down to one day. I think it is hard for them to get all the volunteers they need. So that does make it a little more crowded, and you need to be a little more strategic with your visits.
I want to get to your article in Comstock's magazine. It's in this month's edition, and you really dive into these historical food products in Sacramento that maybe we can take for granted. How did this idea, the story idea, come about?
Well, it was right around 5 years ago. I was thinking about the Corti ravioli. Yep. I'm usually thinking about Corti Brothers, basically. It's pretty common. I spend a lot of money at Corti Brothers. And so I was thinking about the ravioli, how they say it's the longest continuously produced food product in Sacramento. It's been produced for 78 years, the entire run of Corti Brothers. So I was thinking there's an interesting story there, and I pitched the idea to General Manager Rick Minderman, and COVID had just started, and he's like, you know what, it's not the time to write about ravioli. So it had been percolating in my mind, and then I brought it up again, and he said, yes, it's the right time. And so then Comstock's magazine had me line up a couple different places that are also continuously producing products for a long time. And that led to this fun article.
I can't even count the number of times I've had Corti Brothers ravioli. It's a great way to have a quick, delicious dinner. And you get it in the freezer section. But you actually got a front row seat to making this ravioli. Help us visualize what it's like.
Yeah, it was a dream come true, really, to put on that hairnet and go in the back kitchen at Cordy Brothers.
First time I've heard it's a dream come true to put on a hairnet.
For me, I don't know, I'm weird. So they produce it right in the back, which you might think that it's coming from a factory or shipped, but no, they make it back there. It's this gargantuan ravioli making machine. It's 27 feet long. There's 9 people manning this machine at any one time. And Cordy Brothers, their first machine was built in the 1920s. And that one lasted until about the 70s. And then they got the machine that they have now. So it's a very old fashioned contraption. They load in the dough, they load in the toppings. It makes the shapes. They have a whole crew scooping it up into the boxes. There's flour flying everywhere. It was so cool to observe.
Yeah, a mess in the very best way. Why is the shape of the ravioli? I love the shape. It's smaller than what you would think from, I guess, a ravioli that you would get at the market or maybe at a restaurant.
Right. They're very cute little ravioli that come in the box. And the reason for that is this older machine, and it is the ideal pasta to filling ratio that Cordy Brothers wants. So they could get a newer machine that would be much more compact, but it would not have that pasta to filling ratio.
Yeah, now it's just like a signature, you mm-hmm. know, that's what you expect. You also went down to the pocket area and profiled a chocolatier. Tell us about them. It goes back like 3 or 4 generations, right?
Right. I think Kobasik's Candies is a little bit of a hidden gem. I think they have their loyal fans and they are thriving. They're open 7 days a week on Riverside. But I think that more people should know about Kobasik's because they're making high quality chocolates, and it's a fourth generation family of candy makers that started in at the turn of the they opened in 1906 in Upper Peninsula, Michigan, with Jim Kobasik, the current candy maker. It was his grandfather. So they started making candies there. Jim moved out here and started a candy making company. And now his daughters, Nancy and Kathy, are participating with him.
What do you recommend people get if it's their first time?
They have 17 different caramels.
Wow.
And they also make truffles, ganache-filled truffles that they call cruffles with a K, which is the fun twist for Kobasik's with a K. And I like their balsamic vinegar cruffle.
Oh, yum. Definitely have to check that out. And all those different caramels is pretty amazing. Finally, you also profiled making sausage. Taiwanese sausage, in fact, at Taiwan's Best Mart. That's in Southside Park in the city center. How did you land on this spot?
I just love Taiwan Best Mart. That Southside Park area is just popping with so many different restaurants there. Binshoyaki, Southside Super. There's so many good places to eat there. So I love Taiwan Best Mart. And it was actually started by Luke Chang. He's been making the sausage since the early 2000s. He opened Taiwan Best Mart in 2012. And then he decided to step back and sell Taiwan Best Mart earlier this year to another family. It's still quite good. But his daughter, Christine Chang, has taken over the sausage making enterprise with his recipes. And they now have a company called Hoja Foods that's making almost 2 tons of sausage per month.
Wow. So I haven't tried this sausage. What does it taste like?
The sausage is very flavorful. They're small sausages. They have different flavors, such as rice wine. They've got a lean version. They've got a spicy version. They've got garlic. And Christine told me the key that she thinks that makes has their sausage standing out is that the way that they prepare the fat. They have a special fat cutting machine. So she said it's not greasy or mushy because the fat has that integrity and that succulence within the sausage. So that's what she said stands apart.
Oh, awesome.
And you can get that sausage. It's in the Taiwan Best Mart food. It's sold in the freezer case there. And I love to take some home and prepare it. And also it's sold in some local businesses such as Buddha Bowls and Rolls.
Yum. And so if you just head over to Taiwan Best Mart, want to pick up lunch, it's as easy as that.
They are so quick. You can order online. It's a great lunch while you're working, and I like the stewed pork rice bowl.
I got to try that too. And I am getting hungry. I guess, Becky, it seems like you have a good problem where, you know, you just have to eat at a bunch of places and then you get to profile just some really great family history in Sacramento.
Yeah, it's an abundance of riches, but I'm always having to research that next meal. So that's pretty fun.
Do you have a little teaser of maybe what's brewing for you next? Something else you want to ride on?
Yeah, I've been heading out to Rockland. Rockland, for the size of the city that it is, has a lot of interesting stuff going on there with food and beer. And so just recently I was at Mezcalito Oaxaca Grill, and I had a taco with beef and chapulines. So I had grasshoppers. Yeah, and it was delicious.
Showing Placer County some love.
Mm-hmm.
Becky, as always, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Becky Greenwald is a food and culture writer in Sacramento. You can find her latest issue of Comstock's magazine, where she writes about some Sacramento staples that we just unpacked right now. And of course, you can follow her blog, Heka Sac. We have a link to that on our Insight page. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests and events at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple or Spotify, or really wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to join the conversation and reach out to us, you can send us an email at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Sarit Lashinsky and Jen Picard. Insight's technical director and audio engineer is Mark Jones. Our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here on Monday.